Hello, this is Dina Eccles for Changing the Narrative on WDRT. I'm giving some background to the conversation you are about to hear. On July 22, 2026, a man was shot and killed by police on the corner of Williamson and South Baldwin Streets in Madison. A call had come to police that a man was checking car handles and may have stolen a bicycle. 4 officers arrived on the scene. The officers were forewarned about the possible assailant's previous resistance to arrest. They knocked the man off a bicycle. 2 tasers were deployed and the man dropped to the ground. It is said the man had a large knife. It is said, without proof, that an officer was injured by that knife. The injured officer then, while the man was still pinned to the ground, stood up and fired 3 shots, killing him. There were multiple witnesses and video footage of this execution. The 4 police officers are on paid leave. The shooter was identified on August 10th. To date, September 9th, there have been no formal charges made and there is no accountability for the shooting. Independent investigation has been hampered and peaceful protests demanding accountability have been shut down. This is near the location of another police killing of an unarmed young man in 2015. There has never been accountability in that killing. No criminal charges against the officer were filed. It was determined the lethal force used was self-defense. Both men who were killed were Black, Tony Robinson and Corey Ruiz. The pain suffered by the community is palpable. The anger is real. The unanswered questions keep coming. Why? Why has another mother lost a son? A young daughter lost her father? Why are police not trained and equipped to spare life, not take it? Why are there not enough trained personnel to de-escalate these kinds of situations? Why does our society continue to give permission to authority to kill with no consequence? And perhaps most significantly, what role does racism play in these acts of violence? These are the questions my guest and I will attempt to unravel from our perspectives in this podcast. It is my hope that this conversation will spur thinking and resolution for change.
Narrative with Dina Eccles.
We each have a role to play in making
implies,
a better world.
This podcast is
we
about
each play
uplifting
a part
voices of
in creating peace.
That are often dismissed or left unheard. With the recent police execution of Corey Ruiz in Madison and the reluctance of the local government and police to respond with accountability, it seemed necessary to find someone who could express the grief, outrage, and refusal to accept the continued violence to the Black community in Madison. It's also imperative to acknowledge the systemic racial violence that has haunted this country from its beginning and continues with little consequence. For these reasons, and because I believe it's beyond time for white people to rally to end the ignorance and indifference that has plagued us, it's time we face our past and begin to heal. This quest to find someone who could speak to us led me to my guest, Reverend Laleda Gee. Laleda is a champion of young and old Black women, encouraging their healing and empowerment, and the author of the acclaimed I Can't Live Like This Anymore. She's an artist with a passion to help the healing of her people in every creative form available. Getting to know her without ever meeting her has been a delight and a challenge, as you will soon hear. So welcome, Laleda.
And thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So where would you like to begin?
You lead. I'll follow.
Well, again, everything that I was saying that I really wanted to hear from the people who were most impacted, because the media has its take, you know, the police right away have their take, but as human beings, you know, what it can only be harmful, painful to live these violent deaths. So that's
absolutely
that's what I wanted to hear you express.
Yeah. So, you know, it's odd. Willie Street, where Corey Ruiz was murdered, is a very white, liberal area. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to me that 3 to 4 black men have actually been killed by police on that street. And so it's just odd. I think prior to Tony Robinson, I falsely believed, seeing so many black people, men and women, executed by the police, unarmed. I didn't think we'd see that here. And that was my mistake. I grew up in Madison. I've been here since 1971 and grew up really in a different Madison than we see today. And as I look at, and I'm not minimizing the fact that there was a knife involved and all of that, but I'm just so curious how you can have so many white assailants with guns loaded, cocked, and ready, who have killed children, who have killed high school students and elementary school students and blown up buildings, how they all get apprehended without harm. Yet, black people are being murdered, no weapon. And even when I looked at, unfortunately, I did see the video. Looking at the video, I'm thinking there's 4 or 5 cops on him. Where has the training failed that 4 or 5 cops can't disarm one man? What is that? And even with the close shooting, I'm thinking not only did they kill Corey, but they put the other cops at risk, discharging the gun in that tight nest that they were all in.
I mean, it clearly has something to do with the training. I
Absolutely, or lack thereof.
and lack thereof, right? It has to have something to do with it because I've researched this for a long, long time because it's been curious to me. And many countries, particularly, in Europe, they do not shoot to kill. They shoot vague. They shoot to distress. They don't shoot to kill. So that's one issue that I. Why have we allowed the escalation of such grotesque violence among our police? And I know a lot of people out here. They have the back the blue, and I understand the thinking. And I've had dear friends who say, the police put themselves in danger. And that was the storyline around Corey, that he had a knife. It was a big knife. And but I don't believe the storyline. I don't believe we have to keep promoting and allowing this to happen unchecked. And the fact that they're still withholding, if, please correct me if I'm wrong, but they seem to still be withholding video evidence and different things around this. They're not really, and they haven't arrested the officer who actually did. This was July 22nd.
Because even, I'm not an officer. One of my brothers was a Chicago officer for almost 30 years in Chicago, in the city, and he never shot one person. Not one person. And, bring back the batons. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Hit him in the back of the leg so that he drops down, knock the knife out his head. Because even when they say an officer was injured, you know what they never say? They never say an officer was stabbed. So I don't even know if there's actual proof that he injured the officer with the knife. I haven't seen a bloody knife. I haven't seen any pictures of the officer with bandages. Obviously, the officer was still able to shoot to kill. So, and I don't play down the fact that police officers do put themselves in harm's way. But, I don't know. It's just crazy to me. And even when you're looking at the number of unarmed black men that have been killed, when you look at unarmed Black women who have been killed. Most of the men have been killed outside on the street, in the community, in public. Most of the women who have been shot and killed, a lot of them were in their home.
Right. And even calling for help. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, these are the things that we need to, I think, we need to call into question.
Mm-hmm.
Can't just keep blindly believing the media accounts, you know, without questioning, coming back to, you know, where is our humanity in all of this?
Right. And I think the thing that has, I won't say surprised me, I'm not surprised by it, but when you look on social media, the lack of empathy, the comments, like I've made several comments about this, the blatant racial comments that have been made to me. I've been called the N-word. There's been no regard for the mother and her loss, the daughter and the loss of her father. It's just like you can still believe the police was right without being a racist. You could believe that the police did the right thing without having apathy towards the family, towards the mother. You know, that's the part I don't get.
Mm-hmm. Right, because to me, know, that kind of brings us to the deeper reality.
Mm-hmm.
One, it's the first question is policing, and why does it seem to be different for people of color, and not just Black,
mm-hmm.
people, Native people, brown people, as we're now seeing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, mm-hmm. So it really brings in the reality of the question of race, which too many of us have not taken the time to review in ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where our prejudice.
Right.
So that's my hope in this conversation is that,
mm-hmm.
that you could be heard because there, like I said, there's not a lot of voices here in this, mm-hmm. area who, you know, necessarily represent your voice.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is the narrative of the dangerous Black man.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at who does school shootings,
mm-hmm.
white males, when you look at who does the majority of rapes, white males, and that's across the board. Like generally when crimes are committed, it is by convenience. Most crimes are committed by people who live within about a 2-mile radius of where that crime was committed. So white people create crimes on white people in their neighborhood, Black people in their neighborhood, et cetera, et cetera. But white men rape everybody. And their numbers are high. When you look at participation in child pornography, it's white men. So where is the narrative coming from of this Black on Black crime? Well, there's white on white crime. That kind of language is used to create a false narrative of what actually is true. You know, all of us, not just me as a Black woman, all of us, and particularly, let's just say women, every woman in America is most at risk from being harmed by a white male.
Mm.
And the statistics bear it out.
Yeah, they do. And I would urge people who are sitting there in disbelief because you've heard the narrative that's contrary to that, to please look it up. Because what, mm-hmm. you're saying, I know, is true.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an important moment to have this conversation because it's, you know, and since July 22nd, the bigger picture in the United States, and it's so painful for me to even talk about this, and I really thank you for being able to have a conversation, mm-hmm. has been a number of quote-unquote suicides by hanging.
Oh, my God.
In this country, this to, mm-hmm. the last few weeks.
Right.
You know, it's like, and how many Black friends of mine, and how many times have I heard people say, Black people do not lynch themselves. They don't hang themselves. So,
no.
Can you
They don't do it. They don't do it. Like, and especially a black woman, she's gonna go outside, find a tree, throw the rope. It just does not happen. It doesn't happen. We don't do that. I'm not saying a black person has never hung themselves. I'm just saying black people don't go out in public and hang themselves. And then even when you're looking at suicides by women, most suicides by women are nonviolent. Women don't tend to shoot themselves. They don't hang themselves. I'm talking about statistically. They usually are taking pills, maybe slitting their wrist. But violently killing themselves, statistically, it doesn't happen. It's a minority of things. And say, even if it did, if this was something, wouldn't it be weird that all of a sudden, all these suicides outside on a tree are happening? And how many of them have been in Mississippi? You know, it's just unheard of. In my whole lifetime, I'm 60, I have only heard of, known one degree of separation of one black man who hung himself, and he hung himself at home. I've never, outside of that, known anyone to hang themselves that's black.
So how do you take the narrative, the media narratives, how do you deal with it? I mean, I know what happens to me, you know. So, but how do you deal with it?
It's maddening. And you know, you can only keep telling your truth to get in a back and forth argument with people who have just chosen to believe a lie. It doesn't go anywhere. So I try to continue to educate myself to speak my truth, to get that information out there if I can. I've used different mediums like podcasting, radio, and things of that nature to kind of get my voice and perspective out there. But arguing with people trying to prove something that they obviously refuse to believe, that the sky is blue, what can you do? You know, you can continue to do your own work. You can educate yourself. You can educate your children. You know, educate those in your community, at your church. But some people are so committed to believing the lie. I don't even think I want them to know the truth. What would they do with it?
I want them to know the
I don't think they
truth.
would do anything with it. So that's the thing. You know, I think we have to focus on those who are curious. Focus on those who want to learn, as opposed to trying to convert other people.
Agreed. No, there I totally agree. And I think that's part of my reason for doing these kinds of interviews is that maybe one person will hear you or, you know, hear you speak and it'll start to, you know, because I always say, like, put your foot in the door, stop the door from closing all the way. You know, it'll just that chance to say, okay, maybe I have very unwittingly bought this. I have a fear of black. If I see a black man, I have a fear, you know, and maybe you question that, you know, a little wee. I know. So that's my hope is that those listening who are capable. Yeah, because I don't think the majority of people, I don't think they really want to harbor the hatred and the fear. That's a lot to carry around. You know, it has to harm you.
It does harm whether or not they want it or not. I'm not sure about that. But it's been so ingrained. It's like when you breathe air, that's how racism is in America. You breathe air, it all comes in your lungs. You know, and you have to be able to have some kind of a filter to believe something different. Because even again, as they talk about how violent black people are, like, give me some for instances where black people have just attacked white people as a ongoing major impact. You can't. I'm not saying there's no individual stories where Black people have, had crime against white people. I'm not saying that. Of course they have. But when you think about like grandiose movements like the KKK, they were just about hurting and hating Black people. The Black Panthers, which people want to say, so many negative things about them, they were feeding children. They were teaching. They were empowering Black people. They weren't going and attacking white neighborhoods. They weren't burning crosses in white yards. They weren't doing that. But yet they were seen as dangerous and militant and all these things that we've never condemned in this country, the KKK, that still is in existence. Why isn't that, seen as a terrorist organization? Like, tell me one Black person in America that has created a terroristic act. Just one. Give me one name. No, but I could give you a list of white people.
No, I totally am in agreement. It's painful.
It is. And it's scary because when I think about the hangings down south, I think Black people can't afford to go someplace by themselves. Because these people had to been abducted walking down the street, going to school, on their way home, whatever, on their way to work. If I lived down south right now, I wouldn't let my children go anywhere by themselves.
No, for sure. And then you have to look at the systemic consequences of this because now we know that the surgeon or the whatever they're called, the coroner in Mississippi has signed off on these as suicides. That it's a woman and she has, and it's like, okay, really? So this is where some people are challenging it and asking to do separate autopsies, and all of that takes money. And and can you? I know you can, and I'm sort of asking my audience to consider what a family member must go through when they're waiting to hear and find the truth behind why their beloved is now dead, and these accusations have been placed on them. That you know in your gut, is not true. But the media has proclaimed it. And we, like, I hate when people say people are like sheep because I have sheep. My sheep are smarter than a lot of people.
I bet that's true.
So it's not just like sheep, but there is something, this thing where we just, but I think there's some reason somebody gets something from it. It's like, I think it was Baldwin, who James Baldwin, who talked about the well, it was many people for sure, but that white people who accept these stories are trying to elevate themselves somehow in capitalist positioning. I think, yeah, that's true, but
Well, the interesting thing too is that when an unarmed Black person is killed, immediately we're looking for criminal records and we're talking about they did this and they did that. When a white person is involved in a crime, like was it Sandy Hook, Sandy Hawk, Sandy Hook, the immediate narrative, he was a gifted violinist. He had mental health issues. It's the narrative that paints them, even though he was a monster, that paints them as a victim. That immediately has a sympathy towards them. Because like even when you look about the new allegations that are coming out, is it Penn State with that cocaine ring? If they had been all black, you would see mug shots. All these young white men are shown in suits and looking studious, and aren't they just great people? Oops, they just made a mistake. It's always this oops, they made a mistake, or they're really good kids. They deserve, a second chance and all of these things. But immediately black people are made the villain.
Yeah, and thank you for pointing that out. And I hope that people are hearing it. I should say that this is WDRT, and this podcast is called Changing the Narrative. I'm Dina Eccles, and my guest is Leleda Gee from Madison. And we're talking about racism, but we're talking about it within the context of the killing by police of Cory Ruiz on July 22nd, and the subsequent murders that have occurred in Mississippi and elsewhere that have been called suicides but are lynchings. And we're just exploring this and why some of, you said early on that you live in Madison and that part of Madison is considered very liberal. I'm familiar with it. I know the area, and a lot of my very liberal, progressive friends live there. But then it comes also, the call came to the police about property disturbance. And this is something that I always wonder about. Why do we encourage the police? Why do we fear property? Why is property more valuable than human life? I mean, this.
And it is legally, somebody comes in your house, you can shoot and kill them and be out in an hour. But if a man batters his wife or rapes his daughter, those things are not prosecuted to the same extent. So why is a house, a building, more valuable than a woman, than a child? It's because white men have made the laws. That's why. White men make allowance and excuses for other white men who rape and harm.
As we're seeing,
Always have.
and as we're seeing in the current status of the Epstein situation,
Absolutely.
and
Absolutely.
how it's an international cabal, and a lot of princes and all kinds of people are involved, and how there it will not it's not coming up. So how do we how do you grab people and shake them and say, hey, we have a voice here? I mean, look, I have to be realistic. It was a high number of white women who elected, well, who we now know is a rapist. A convicted rapist. I mean, this is
I mean,
something.
essentially, white women voted him in. It's something like 92% of black women voted for Kamala Harris. And it's interesting, even like it, even with them overturning Roe versus Wade, that's like white women's thing. Abortion, reproductive rights, even they're voting against their own interests.
Yeah, but also what I always think about with that is a lot of those people who are voting seemingly against their own interests will always find a way to get to an abortion. I
Yeah,
mean,
but we're dealing with a different game now, where women are under threat of arrest.
Doctors.
Doctors, they're talking about monitoring. This is a whole nother subject. Monitoring women's ovulation. What? What?
No,
Yeah, it's crazy.
I always think about that too, the trajectory. And again, this is why I invited you to be on in conversation, because If we don't put our brakes on the trajectory of the lack of empathy, the trajectory that we have continually allowed in this country, because it's been here since the very beginning, and people don't.
Absolutely.
And they're trying to change the history every chance they get.
Every chance they get.
But the reality is the same. The reality
yeah.
is what we need to face. And if we did, I think all the dreams of what this country could be is still there. But we have to face that. We have to face it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Even, you know, when you look at the Latino vote, they definitely voted against their own interests. And I find it a bit comical. It seems that some of the Latinos who were the most vocal about voting for Donald Trump, the one who made the song and the one guy who owned a restaurant and had the Trump hamburger and all of that, those are the people that are getting deported. It's almost as if, thank you for the vote, but I can see you're a traitor. Get out of here. The people, the Latinos I've seen have been the loudest, gotten the most airplay. They are the ones who are being deported as well.
Yeah, there's no, because it's, because what's happening is it's a continuation of, it is white supremacy. It is. We're dealing with
and
it.
Then, but then there's this pressure from the Latino community, from the white community. Why aren't Black people protesting what's going on with ICE? Why aren't Black people speaking up? And y'all voted for this. So now I'm supposed to put myself at risk to fight for what you voted for? Oh, no. Nope. You, what's the F-A and F-O'd? And that ain't none of my business. I'm not getting involved in that at all. Because when it's time for someone to stand up for Black people, where are the Latinos? Mm. Where are the Asians? Mm. You know, where are all of these people that we're asked to continue to put our bodies in danger on the line for? Where are they when we need help?
Mm. Boy, that is an open wound.
Mm-hmm.
Pressing is such an open wound. I have to believe it's one that can heal. Because a lot of these people are being also taken away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, now they're seeing the that they sided in the wrong way. You know, all of these detention centers and you know, we were talking about groups earlier, terrorist groups, and now the Southern Poverty Law Center, who has been one of the probably greatest advocates to challenge things like the KKK and stuff. Now they're being scrutinized. Now they're being stopped. Now they're being persecuted. Their top person is now, I think, been arrested or something is happening.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and the this is what's happening. The if you have been some, and this is helping to silence voices that could be not working, at least it's not working in my case. But you know, this idea of fear. Things keep happening that are allowing a different narrative to come out.
Yes.
You know, things are happening. And I want to promote that. I want to promote the unity that could still happen. But you, I saw in your reading about you that you call yourself a healer, and I think you are. And clearly the work that you've done that I read about is amazing.
Thank
and,
you.
You know, really full of passion and really good. And
thank you.
I just feel like that's what needs to keep happening. You know?
To a degree. Like, at some point, can the injury end? I want to go out of business as a healer. I want to go out of business.
Oh, yeah.
But the injury continues and continues and continues and continues, you know. And that's the sad part. people like me who are healers will always be needed.
Yeah. I've been blessed to know many. I had a, and people who listen to my podcast know I always talk about a Navajo woman who was someone I spent a few decades traveling to see and learn from. And it helped me understand the isolationism that occurred in white communities, you know, and I appreciated so much seeing her community, you know, and how it's had to withstand so much for so long, the persecution, you know, the erosion of their resources still, you know,
still.
And the fight for, and the way that people still come together and care for one another. And so I try to tap into that. I look for those voices. I look for the ones who haven't lost the hope, you know, or the fight. You know, a lot of people, I wrote a book called The Peace Warrior. And people, white people mostly, say to me, those words don't go together. And I say, au contraire, they go together. You have to fight for peace.
You do.
To fight for your own peace within and around us. You have to.
You know, I'll tell you, quite honestly, I have no hope about racism in America getting better. I have no hope at all. Hope is expensive. And so I'd rather use that energy someplace else. I'm not going to sit around hoping one day in the sweet by and by, white people will come to an understanding of how they are wrong, black people in America, and we're going to send around, hold hands, and sing Kumbaya. I have no hope. None.
I always say that I'm not talking about Kumbaya. I don't believe in Kumbaya. I don't believe in utopia. But I do believe that we can get ourselves out of this mess we're in right now.
It's possible, but it's not going to happen.
Oh, darling, I'm going to hold you to that. We're going to have another conversation, hopefully in a few years.
You know, you mentioned James Baldwin
earlier.
It's not going to happen. He talked about how his mother hoped and waited. His grandmother hoped and waited. His great-grandmother hoped and waited. He hopes and waited. And guess what? It still isn't. It will not change. And I'm not saying that some individual people won't change, but I have no hope that America will ever change, particularly towards Black people. None.
Well, that's a very powerful statement.
And white people get really uncomfortable with that. Well, don't you think we should still? No, you hope. I'm not hoping. I got other things to do with that energy that will allow me to get some things done. I'm not spending energy on something I think will never happen.
And that's probably what I heard you say on Facebook, something like that, that made me reach out to you.
Because, maybe.
Yeah, it was just in your face. And I think it should be. You have that right to say that. And I have the right to keep pushing. Because I can't stand living in a world like this, you know? And I'll try to find good ways to do it. I don't waste my time. You know, I don't try to, as we said earlier, convert those who definitely don't want to know.
Right.
Not interested in that game.
Mm-hmm.
I do things like even about the environment out here. You know, I try to encourage people to understand this incredible place that we live in. And if we don't protect it, you know, and people are like, no, we don't want to have laws, you know, because it'll stop this and that. And I'm like, you better protect this place. Like, you know, most recently yesterday, when this comes out, it will have been, I think it was August 24th, 25th, that the pipeline at the Bad River was opened, you know, a truck. I love this. An unaccompanied truck drifted down and hit the pipeline. And
What?
yeah, and the gases.
Oh gosh.
Luckily it wasn't oil. It
Oh
was
my God.
these vapors that went, and people had to evacuate their homes. And there's more to it. I mean, this is just recently happening. And I keep saying to the people here, stand up and do something. Protect, because it won't be able to be kept. And it's a fight. It's a fight. But it's not a fight that I'm willing to give up right now. So, you've tried to find creative ways. You're very creative. I saw your artwork and
Thank
I
you.
love it. It's beautiful. So you
Thank
try
you.
to find creative ways to reach people, to remind who they could be, who they could be. They just allow themselves. So we're coming, we still have some time here, and I want to make sure that you get to say everything that you're feeling, however painful it might be for people to hear. But also, the good things that you are doing that do fill you.
Yeah, so you mentioned my art, and art is definitely a vehicle of healing. And I use my art in that way to bring healing, to help Black girls have a positive identity, to help Black women have peace. And those are things that I love investing in. And those are the places I like to put my energy. Because I feel like there's going to be a return, that that investment is going to produce something positive. Even if it's just the ability to withstand what Black people in America must withstand. And those are the things where I like to invest,
Well, I mean, that's important, significant, and I'm so glad that you were willing to talk to me.
Absolutely.
This is an investment.
Conversations are important. That's where we begin to have an understanding. And I think we look at the complexity of the problem of racism in America and all that, and we want to have this massive shift and change. But most change does not happen that way. It goes from the micro to the macro. And I think if we spent a little bit more time and looking at how we raise our children, looking at how we have educated ourselves or educating ourselves, within our family context, within our church or faith community, within our community. If we start smaller, I think we can have some snowball impact. But I think when you try to, eat the whole elephant with one bite, it's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. But you can't eat an elephant one bite at a time.
Well, this is a good point. And so everybody needing to just step up and do what it is that they can do.
Yeah, I mean, if you just individually strove to be a better person, to be more loving and kind, just individually, the power of that decision is very impactful. It's just like you're in a pitch black room. Say you're in a warehouse that's 30,000 square feet, pitch black. You can light one small match and illuminate the room.
There you go. I totally
So
agree.
it's not necessarily you got to build a bonfire and all these things. It's not always that. Sometimes it's the small spark that begins to build something. But we don't want to do that often because we want to change and we want change now. But unless we change as individuals, we cannot have community change. We can't have change in our country if individual people don't change.
I totally agree. One of the things that that I'm part of is it's called the Peace Education Program. It's completely geared to that. It's a free program, and it just allows people to explore their strengths. So, you know. And so I am 100% in agreement. But sometimes you have to, that cup has to get emptied a little bit, you know, so that you can put something good in it. You know, if you've been raised fearing Black people, say, or not caring about the earth, throwing your garbage, you know, that's how you were raised. That has to start to come away a little bit so that you're patient. For your humanity, for the earth, for all of those things can take root, you know? That's how I look at it.
Or you let it overflow. Just add it to the cup and let it overflow. And when you let it overflow, the things from the bottom come up and spill out.
Oh, that would be good. I like that. That's a good image. I would accept that. I'll accept anything that moves in a good direction at this point.
Right. Right.
Well, I know I've kept you to the time we said, and I really want to thank you for a very honest conversation. We didn't really talk much. In fact, we never met before, but just a little bit on Facebook, little exchanges at 4 in the morning. But so I really appreciate this, and I hope people have appreciated the honesty and will take some of it to heart. That some people who are capable take to heart what you've said, and that maybe that those seeds can be planted and something else can happen.
Absolutely.
I'm personally, I know I'm a little older than you now. And I'm very weary of what I hear over and over and over again. I'm tired of it. I want to see it change.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this has been great. We're going to have to meet up sometime. I'll come to Madison or you come here and we'll finally lay eyes on one another besides.
That sounds good.
You know? But I want to tell everyone that this has been WDRT and the show is Changing the Narrative with Dina Eccles. And my guest has been a wonderful example of humanity. She lives in Madison. We've talked about many things regarding race and hopefully what could change. And her name is Leleda Gee. And look her up. Do you want to say anywhere people could find you?
Yeah, they can go to Leleda.org, Leleda.org, and I have a comment section on that website if they want to reach out. Don't write me with nothing crazy, because I'm gonna write you back with something crazy.
That's what I saw, and that's why I said I want to hear this woman speak. Well, thank you, my dear.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, take care, everyone.